Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different businesses and stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share, subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode. Clan Credo was established by the Presentation Order of Nuns in 1996. While social finance was a well-established concept in America and Europe, there was nothing like it in Ireland. After a successful pilot project, the Presentation Nuns put €1 million seed capital into a social investment fund. Other religious charities chipped in, and now Clan Credo also borrows money from the Social Finance Foundation, a wholesale fund set up by the government. Clan Credo accelerates positive community impact by making flexible and fair lending accessible to every community in Ireland. Their vision is a society where every community has the opportunity to drive positive impact for all. They believe in the power and passion of community volunteers to shape society for the better of all. For their part, they do everything they can to accelerate positive community impact. Mary Lawler is Chief Executive Officer of Clan Credo, and under her leadership, it continues to strengthen its position as a thought leader in impact lending, expanding access to fair, flexible lending for community and social enterprises across Ireland. Mary also developed a dynamic funding model for social finance, which the government has now adopted themselves. Before joining Clan Credo in 2021, Mary served as Chief Executive of Carlow County Development Partnership from 2009 and previously as Chief Executive Officer of Carlow Leader Rural Development Community for 7 years, working directly with communities to translate ambition into tangible economic social progress. Mary, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for the invitation.
Very welcome. Right, where to begin? Okay, the idea of a community group, right, probably has a bad and out-of-date rap about it, like that in this day and age couldn't be further from the reality.
Yeah.
So tell me what, you know, the misconception and what the reality is.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, Aidan. The misconception is that community development are a group of people hovering over one cup of coffee with the aim someday of picking up rubbish or collecting some bottles for recycling and so on. But that model is well and truly gone. Today's community group acts like a business. They are ambitious, they are organised, they are structured. They carry out research in their community to identify gaps in service provision or project provision, and then they set about filling those gaps through drawing down grant aid, social finance, and different sources of funding. So community development in the last 10 years is growing from strength to strength, and it is a very ambitious and dynamic sector. We've mapped out about 10,000 active community organisations in Ireland, and you'll hear a lot about social enterprises, and that's really important. A title or label to put on community groups, because yes, everybody knows about the social part, but the enterprise part is there as well, and that's growing in strength, from strength to strength, driven by regulations and the charities regulator, which is no harm. Governance is really important, but also driven by communities themselves becoming more ambitious. Seeing what communities across Europe are doing, are achieving, and wanting the best for their communities. Mm-hmm. So yes, the days of sitting around a cup of coffee is well and truly finished.
And with that, then, you know, when you look back over your time through your career, like, how do you think the level of professionalism within the sector has increased? Gone from necessarily being a cohort of all volunteers to actually having, you know, proper job titles and proper professionals in those. It's not like somebody doing it on the side.
Absolutely not. There is a very purposeful and rewarding career for executives, for professionals in the social enterprise sector. And in Clan Credo, we have a team of 14 professionals, as you would expect, fully qualified, with a very strong track record in lending. And what we've noticed in the past 5, 6, 8 years, and this is coming from the private sector, is where senior executives in the private sector recognise that their career progression can be enhanced by demonstrating their awareness and engagement in the local community, in sustainability, in ESG matters. So they are offering their services, their skills, their expertise, and joining boards like Clancredo, like in the local community. And that in itself is strengthening community organisations. So there's a few drivers behind that. Yes, executives in their 20s, 30s want to be involved in purposeful employment. Mm-hmm. And then you have executives who want to enhance their own CV through what we call skills-based volunteering. And then we have the regulations from the charities regulator. So all in all, the sector is becoming really robust and governance is really strong.
And do you think, even with all the changes that happened, do you think there's still room to improve that and heighten the level of professionalism? Is that deficit, do you think, still there, or be less than it was?
No, I know the professionalism of any community organisation or social enterprise falls squarely to the board of directors and the chief executive in the organisation. So if a social enterprise or community organisation is falling short of the governance standards expected of them, well, that sits fairly with the organisation themselves. We can't put a blanket approach across all our organisations. The organisations that apply to Clancredo for social finance are mature, they're ambitious, they're well organised, and they are strategic. Mm-hmm. And they are a strong and typical example of the community spirit, the community drive that's out there, that's providing services for you and I day in, day out. Sometimes we don't realise that it's the community group that has shown ambition and determination to put in place, whether it's a sports facility, whether it's the local swimming pool, whether it's the local theatre or arts group, whether it's services for childcare, elder care, people with disabilities, where the private sector isn't able to deliver the service or the scale isn't there, the community organisations step in. Mm-hmm. And that's where the real added value of the community organisations can be seen. And certainly around COVID-19, those couple of years, where did we all turn to? Our locality, the local walks, the local community centres. We were all hovering around and looking at community centres in a different way. So community has a critical part to play in everyday living.
Mm. Talk me through the social finance landscape.
Yeah, so in the US, it's much more developed. And in the US, you'd have, multinationals, the tech sector would be very much investing in social finance organizations. Across Europe, there are very strong pockets, and they would call themselves social banks, and they would have all aspects of banking, taking in deposits and so on. In Ireland, Clancredo was here for 30 years, so we have a proven track record. Mm-hmm. We are the largest provider of social finance. There is one other player, CFI, who provides a service like ours. And then what we're noticing is the credit unions becoming involved in lending to community organisations.
Which kind of makes sense, because the credit unions are kind of in the community.
They are.
They've always positioned themselves in the community.
They are. Now, the government has carried out some research in the last couple of years, and they've put a value on the community and voluntary sector at around 2 billion. Mm-hmm. And there are, as I said, about 10,000 community organisations. We've mapped them out. It's a very buoyant sector. In the next 2 to 3 years, the government are committed to investing over 300 million as a stimulus package into different aspects of the community and voluntary sector. So there's a thriving market out there, and our customer base are the community groups and the social enterprises. So it's a very exciting time to be in the space of social finance.
Yeah. You're a registered charity, yet you don't raise money from the public or receive grants.
Correct,
right?
So yeah.
What's the funding model ultimately for Clan Credo?
Yeah, so we have a number of investors on the philanthropy side, and we have a commercial arrangement with our partner, Social Finance Foundation. So they're the two main avenues for us to access capital. We are developing a strategy around investor diversification, and we want to transfer the US model into Ireland, where the private sector will move closer to the area of social finance and look at organizations like Clan Credo to strengthen their ESG credentials.
So this would be through their CSR program?
Yes, okay. Exactly, yes. And there are many organisations in the private sector who are engaged in donations and skills-based volunteering, but the Clan Credo model is different. Social finance model is different insofar as we are seeking investment to deliver on our mission. And like every investment, you'll get a return and you'll get your capital back. That's the principle. So we're not seeking grant aid or anything like that. It's not our model. Our model is to source capital. We add value through the building of the relationship with the community group. The frontline team add value through their advisory service. And the project on the ground is completed. We're happy because the social impact has been delivered. The customer pays us back the capital and we recycle to the next project. And that's the model that works really well.
We've had a few charities or not-for-profits on the show. And, you know, there's a kind of perception out there, once you put the not-for-profit onto title onto something, they go, oh, well, it's probably not really run as an enterprise, proper enterprise. But the reality is, if you want to last long, you've got to run it like a business.
It is. It absolutely is a business. And when I hear people saying, oh, you're not for profit, well, I say quickly, we're not for loss either.
Yeah.
We operate on very sound lending and enterprise principles. We have all you would expect in a well-run organisation in terms of all our marketing functions, our HR functions, our internal audit functions, finance functions, frontline service delivery. And we have our strategic plan that we developed and invested in 2025. Last year was our first year of a three-year strategy. That worked really well. We got that really right. We read the marketplace really well, if I can say. So that's working really well, and we're well positioned for 2026. But every strong organization will have a strong board of directors or a strong leadership team. We don't have shareholders. Mm-hmm. And that's a key difference between us and we'll say, and the PLCs in Ireland. We have a very strong board of directors who bring their expertise and skills from various organisations like KPMG, Accenture, AIB and so on. So that's a very strong governance framework to work within. And then we would have very strong advisory committees. We have our risk advisory committee, we have our credit committee, and we also have our finance and audit committee. So we have the structures you would expect to see in any and every well-run organisation. The difference with Clan Credo is we uphold our values on a daily basis. And when we are going about our business, when we are evaluating applications for loan finance, we credibly and honestly give a 50-50 percent split between the commercial side, i.e. the borrower's capacity to repay, and the social impact.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the loan book. What's the size of it currently? And then, you know, what's the typical kind of scale or size of loans that are done?
Yeah, so last year was a strong year for us. We had a 14% growth. We were very happy with that. It's currently at 62 million. Mm-hmm. It's always moving because loans are paid back and loans are coming on, which is strong. In 2025, we approved just over 48 million of new loans to community groups, strongest year ever. And typically, loans might be paid back in the region of 15, 16, 18 million a year. So that's the type of activity. We're very comfortable lending up to 800,000, 900,000 per project. We have some borrowers on our book north of a million euros. They tend to be more on the capital expenditure side around social sheltered housing and acquisition of land or buildings to expand services. But Aidan, we're also very comfortable at the 10,000, 20,000 euro alone for emerging community groups who may not have a track record in credit and they're starting out. Yeah. And so we have developed new products for, we'll say, the lower value end to us, but very important to the customer. That's an Acorn product that we launched that last year, and we have great traction around it. And then for organisations who are in rented properties and the demand for their services in their local community is very strong. They're ambitious. They want to grow. They have a vision. And so they want to acquire a building to own themselves. And we have a product for that called Next Gen. Mm-hmm. So it's for the next generation. So we offer term loans and bridging loans, working capital. Okay. So that's the range.
Okay. And you know, when you look at it, the have you many repeat borrowers? So like you know that will might take it now, pay it back in whatever period, and then the next project comes up, and there's a repeat.
Yes, we have a high number of existing customers, and the key there is we build relationships. That's the key added value from our perspective. We are a finance partner for organizations. So we have a high number of customers coming back, whether it's on a phased basis for a phase of a project, or they may close a project and come away 2 years later. And there's a strong pattern of that. But what's very evident from our own analysis is the level of referrals from existing customers.
Okay.
90% of our business comes from our referrals from existing customers. Yeah. Okay. So word of mouth. And that's really a valuable feedback to us. It tells us our customers trust us. They have confidence in our understanding of their sector, which can be lumpy, it can be up and down. The drivers behind the projects can be short of time. They have their own careers, they have their own families. So the plan might be the project will take 6 months, might take 8 months.
Right.
So we understand all of that. We understand there may be delays with grant aid. So we're well positioned as a trusted partner. And that gives me great energy. That gets me up in the morning. That gives me a real sense of purpose, that there are communities that can rely on Clan Cradle.
And give us an idea of the spectrum of community groups that we're talking about.
Yeah. So across our loan book, a strong footprint in sports and recreation. We are a sporting nation. And it's well proven that to engage with communities, you'll do so through two main channels, either sport or music and arts. So sport, we're tailor-made for sport in Ireland. So our sport and recreation would have a strong footprint. We have a lot of GAA clubs, rugby clubs, tennis clubs, cricket clubs, swimming clubs, athletic clubs. All seeking to enhance their services to local communities. We have a strong footprint with approved housing bodies. They're local community groups who are committed to tackling homelessness in their community. And so they set about developing quality homes for persons in rented accommodation or who are homeless. We have a strong number of proposals, projects that support people with disabilities. I'm particularly proud of the Blue Teapot theatre group in Galway. They were in rented accommodation, delivering their services to adults with disabilities, and they wanted to acquire a building just to anchor themselves in Galway City. So we were delighted to be able to help them. So that's fantastic. But also on the enterprise side, social enterprises, we have we're delighted to support an organisation in Dublin called SPADE, St. Paul's Area Development Enterprise, and they're set up to support small artisan businesses who want to incubate and then they want to grow into small food businesses. So we were able to support them with finance to upgrade all their facilities to reach the standards required to offer those incubation units. So there's some areas, but really we're very clear that our business model is focused on the communities themselves identifying the services they need. And that's called community-led local development. So we're not overly prescriptive, or you must have this or you must have that. We look at each application and we look for evidence that the application for finance is not from one or two individuals, but rather there's almost a mandate from the wider community. Exactly, yeah.
So talk to me then, how do you assess the criteria for each loan?
Yeah, so we have a terrific head of credit and a credit committee, and they look at the higher value loan applications. So in the documentation going forward to that committee, the relationship manager who was engaged with the community group will have first-hand knowledge of the community, the gap in the community service, and will articulate that really well to the credit committee on a case-by-case basis. And we also map our lending against what we call the Pubble Deprivation Index. So we can readily see where a project is located in Ireland, and we can map that against a government map that shows the level of disadvantage. So we know the level of social impact that can be achieved. And then I have a Wayne Scales, I visualise a Wayne Scales in my mind every minute of every day. And on the other side of the Wayne Scales is the commercial side. And that's to ensure that good lending practices are upheld. We are lending finance and we require the borrower to pay it back. And like any lending organisation, if there is a default and it can't be remedied, then, you know, there are implications with the central credit register and groups, their credit reputation can be impacted upon. So that's how so it's the credit committee with our head of credit and our frontline team who are financial advisors. So they would bring the projects into the committee, and the committee comprises representatives from the high street banks, from some of the large four advisory groups, but also from the community and voluntary sector. So that's really important. But we have four pathways in total. And depending on the value and the risk attached to each proposal, which the head of credit almost triages when it comes in, we can turn our decisions around in 24, 48
That's
hours.
That's the four-pillar dynamic model, is it?
No. This is four pathways for an application to come through to get a decision from Clan Credo. And it's all internal. But what's really important is we give a decision as quickly as we can, because the community leaders are time sensitive. So they require a decision. So we have four pathways depending on the risk attached to the project and the value of the loan being sought and so on. So that's how we evaluate.
And in terms of you know, the amount of borrowers that you might turn away, like, is you know, you are you is the demand significantly higher than the ability to fund on
absolutely,
that criteria?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a key challenge we have in the business at the moment, and I have a team working with me on it to make sure we have the liquidity, the capital to meet the demand. And it's really important that we're not stimulating the demand. The demand is coming to us, and we're really keen and eager to meet that demand. But I've lost your question.
In terms of the percentage of people that may not meet the criteria for those loans.
Yeah, so we're very clear on the applicant that we want to secure our social finance. So we don't lend to individuals.
Okay.
We don't lend to private commercial enterprises. We don't lend to public bodies.
Okay.
So what's left then is the community and voluntary sector, essentially. And we try to find a solution for the group, and our frontline team are really strong at advising. And it's common for the frontline team, the relationship managers, to say to a community group, you don't actually need a loan from Clan Credo because there's grant aid over there.
Okay.
Or you don't actually need that much loan finance from Clan Credo because we know that this company here gave 5 grand to another business, and there, so we can signpost. It's not our objective or our goal to burden or offload social finance to community groups. That's not what we're about. Our mission is to make social finance accessible. So we're enabling community groups.
Okay.
So we see ourselves, or I visualize us as being the engine, or being the fuel in the community group's engine.
Okay.
We're not the engine. They're the ones that are achieving. We're enabling them.
Presumably then too, one of the big bars that they've got to cross as somebody comes in is the social impact. Like if it doesn't matter whatever else, there has to be a social impact of a certain degree, really, or else it's not for you.
Yes, exactly. And that, it's really evident when you read an application from a community that is mandated by the community, because straight away they'll say, we have X number of kids with disabilities who want to access this service, but there's only 10 places and we have 25 kids. So it's really evident that by expanding that service, the 25 kids can avail of it.
Okay. Then how do you price the loans?
Yeah, one of our key mission, our key mission is to make social finance accessible. And by accessible, we mean understood, that available, people know where to get it, and affordable. So we endeavour to price our finance as cheaply and as efficiently as we can, mindful that we are a social enterprise ourselves and we have to ensure our viability. So we have a terrific finance department, and they crunch all the numbers and they scenario plan. And with the board of directors, then we set the best rates we can for community groups.
So it's almost financing on the loan is almost depend on a case by case basis.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we look at each case on a case by case basis, because every community proposal is unique.
Okay. All right. The what about then the difficult question of you know, at the end of the day you're a lending institution, so there's going to be defaults. So how do you manage defaults, and what's the default experience been like?
Yeah, so we are exceptional in that regard, in that we would have approximately less than 5% loans in default, less than 5%. This is in the public domain, in the last couple of years, we might write off 30,000-40,000 from a 50,000-60,000 loan book.
Okay.
So we're very strong on that front. What's enabling us to have those metrics is the relationships we build with customers. I really believe in the collective governance of a community group. Mm. When you have 6 or 8 people sitting around representing a community, that's a very different governance and accountability level than if you're sitting in your own corner somewhere and you're borrowing for yourself. So I absolutely believe in the collective wisdom and governance of a community organisation. So that's definitely a factor. Now, like every lending organisation, we have a risk advisory committee. And yes, community groups can run into difficulty. They can underestimate the cost. They can encounter challenges like any other business or project. There may be delays in drawing down grant aid, or they may have relied on a contribution or a donation or a fundraiser that didn't quite work out. And we understand all of that because we've seen it before and we've seen groups manage it before. So our finance department and our head of credit with our risk advisory committee, they look at those case loans on a case by case basis. And we can restructure, we can extend the term of the loan, and we can work out a solution whereby the project continues and the project is completed. The group, the community group, is able to repay maybe at a restructured rate, and then on we go, and everybody's happy.
Okay, talk to me then about the ability to scale the business, because by the sounds of it, there's a never-ending demand for loans.
There is.
But on the flip
there
side
is.
Of it, the funding availability.
Yeah, that's a challenge. As I said, we grew last year by 14%, and the sector is buoyant. The government are really targeting their investment, their stimulus packages, right into the heart of communities. There's new channels to the market emerging. So the sector is buoyant. The demand is there. The communities are ambitious. So Clancredo, to enable us to respond as we want to respond, we want to step up and deliver social finance to community groups, will require us to look at alternative sources of capital, will require us to make sure that the private sector, other investors, the philanthropies are aware of the social finance model and how different it is from the grant aid model, and how more possibly more aligned it is with the commercial or the private sector model, because we're comfortably straddling the private sector good lending practices while upholding the values of the community sector. So we're quite unique there. And look, as we said at the start, ESG, CSR, community impact, that's all there. The next wave of employees, they want purposeful employment. They want to be proud of their employers. Climate change is gaining momentum. So there's a business opportunity for corporates to express their values externally through investing in communities. Mm-hmm. And Clancredo is a credible, strong, governance-backed vehicle to do that. And I joined the company 5 years ago. The company is in place for 30 years. So a lot of ambition and vision and work has gone in to developing Clancredo to what it is today. And my task is to bring it forward and ensure that it continues to be well positioned to respond to community groups and their demands.
Do you think when you start, you know, when the pitch ultimately is to corporates and the CSR or type of thing, it's much more about them not just seeing it as a kind of a one-off check they write and they tick a box, and more about them being a permanent source of capital to the model, in that, and it's not about them making a donation every year, but that they, although in theory they are investors and could want the money back, but actually what they just want is the flywheel of the model to continue going.
Exactly. And the best way to achieve that, Alan, is to start investing in community groups. And it depends on the model that suits the corporate best. The Clancredo model is invest in social finance for onward lending to deliver a social return. And like any investment, you'll get a financial return and a social return. So it's very much, we're very much looking for a relationship with investors. Some of our investors are with us 10, 12, 15 years plus. Mm-hmm. And the time frame of community development, it's a medium to long term relationship. Our relationship with the community groups goes back 10, 12, 15, 20 years. So that has to be evident across all points of the supply chain. So an organization who is interested in sustainable community development on a medium to long term basis through a model of strong governance with a proven track record, social finance is a model they should look at. And there's many examples across the water in Europe and US.
And you think it's important then, you know, again, on that whole CSR thing, that the corporates in question kind of have the comfort of, although, as we said earlier on, it's a not-for-profit organisation, it's still run like a commercial enterprise. That they're not going to get the left field PR and a bloody nose.
No. When we engage with investors, we carry out due diligence.
Okay.
And we ensure that there's shared values. And we're on high alert. So I'm talking about us now. We're on high alert to what you will be familiar with, greenwashing.
Yeah.
There's also community washing.
Okay.
So we carry out due diligence, and we would expect an investor to carry out due diligence on us as well. We would expect that. And so our balance sheet is strong. All our systems and supports are strong. Our directors are strong. So it's Clancredo and social finance sits really comfortably on the intersection between the commercial side and the social side. Yeah. And that's a unique position. And for organizations who really want to promote their ESG and CSR, that's where they should look.
I wouldn't say it's an easy way, but it's a very obvious way for them to do that.
Well, it is, because Clancredo operates at national level and we have scale. So we can provide a credible solution to any investor who may want to engage in broad-based social impact. And they may say, well, we're interested in social sheltered housing or people with disabilities or elder care, child care. And so we are able to respond and importantly give, report back on the social impact. And with the type of work the communities we engage with, I can bring you out today and say, there's the project. We can touch it, we can tap it, we can see the people. It's tangible. So all this washing, whether it's greenwashing or community washing, no, that's not what we're about at all.
You oftentimes see this in businesses, but like with success comes the risk of distraction, right? So when you look at it, right, you've been very successful. As you said, the loan book grew strongly last year. The risk would always be that you're widening the jaws too far. So how do you continue to grow and develop it, but not widen the jaws too far that it gets it's unmanageable almost?
Yeah, well, we are positioned to grow. And we have invested in Clancredo in our different departments, our different functions, and so on. So we have future-proofed the organization to grow on the social finance lending side. So we're comfortable there. Now, when you talk about extending the jaws, straight away I think of consultancy, or I think of grant aid, and I think of all that. And I have a firm discipline in my mind: we stick to our knitting. There's enough people providing consultancy. As I said at the start, the government are doing a terrific job injecting grant aid into into the community voluntary sector. There's enough vehicles at local level to disperse the grant aid. Mm. They don't need anybody else. They don't need Clan Credo tripping over them. What Irish society needs is Clan Credo to scale on the social finance side and to be disciplined with that focus. And that's where we are. Our strategic plan has two main pillars. One is optimise the core. I'm a firm believer in make sure the resources you have, you're deploying them as efficiently as you can, and don't get distracted. And then the second pillar is innovate for more. Stay attuned to the marketplace. What are the customers saying? What's the next wave of community ambition? Are we innovating? Are we aligned? Are we reading it properly? And as I said, we have done the team looking at the strategy with me is very strong. We got last year spot on. So I'm very pleased.
And in the same way then, you know, you're talking about innovation, that comes true at, you know, in terms of product innovation.
Yeah.
You mentioned the different ones, that new products that have been developed. It's about as the market changes or the demand changes, you know, it's not that you don't have that, you know, what you have isn't fit for what it's doing. Mm. But is there another product that actually can be used to source the demand that's there?
Exactly. Yeah. Or reach in further to the community groups. Yeah. But there's innovation in our service delivery as well, in terms of simplifying processes, constantly asking ourselves the question, can we make this easier, more straightforward for community organizations? And then there's innovation in our own thinking, in our philosophy and so on. And one thing I'm very strong on, you know, when people talk about innovation, it doesn't have to be earth shattering. No. It doesn't have to be up in the sky. I'm a strong believer in delegation,
okay,
which isn't innovation, but it's a new way of achieving your business objectives. So in the last couple of years, I'm very, very strong in ensuring that the points of decision around loan applications. Remember, I spoke about the four pathways, but one of those pathways, the frontline team, the relationship manager on the spot can say, look, I can look after that for you, as opposed to having to come back into HQ and then gets tied up in paperwork.
So it gives some sort of autonomy to the closer to the client, to the customer.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's really important. And that offers some growth in the role itself. You know, that's a little bit of innovation. Mm-hmm. It's not going to make the headline news, but within an organization, it's very impactful. You'll be aware of entrepreneurship, but then of course you have intrapreneurship where there's change within the business, and I'm a strong advocate for that.
Okay. How do you manage the board when things aren't going well? You said you're a great board, so how do you manage them when things aren't going well?
Well, look, I recognise the expertise around the board, and the boards, any good board will challenge. And any good board will, every good board will deliver on the role of support for the chief executive and the senior team and supervision. And the challenge comes in at the supervision side. So look, sometimes we get it wrong and sometimes people know better. And sometimes people have the experience to add value. So, you know, you just have to listen and never go in with a fait accompli, and be ready to hear and to challenge, but also be ready to stand over your why you brought it this way and why you believe it can work. But your question there reminds me when I was back in my late 20s, when I was taking on a role that involved a board of directors, and my dad said to me, who was a board member in a different sector, said, are you sure you know what you're getting yourself involved in by going in front of a board? And I said, I did, but I didn't, but I do now. Mm. So it's a great learning curve. And there's a huge level of talent in Clan Credo board and in those advisory committees as well. And look, as I say to the guys on a day-to-day basis, we're all in this together. We're one team. And the expertise can be somewhere else, or the advice.
I always remember the Gary McGann, when he was on, he says, what people forget about the board is they are the best qualified and cheapest management yeah. consultants you'll ever find.
They are. And Clan Credo, we engage with Board Match yeah. to recruit talent. Of course, we recruit to our own networks as well. But the feedback I would have got from Board Match is that the calibre, now you might say, of course, Mary, you'd say this, but the calibre of applicants we get for the Clan Credo board is really strong. Mm. And I'm very proud of that, that we can attract talent on a skills-based volunteering across our whole governance structure. So, yeah, so we have to embrace our board members.
That's it. They say the best CEOs are tough-minded but kind-hearted. Oh. Do you believe that?
Do I believe that? I believe the best CEOs are empathetic.
Right.
They see the human being in front of them, and that the best CEOs are consistent.
Mm. And what do you think is the hardest part of the job of being a CEO?
Oh, the role of CEO is a lonely place. Yeah. Yeah. The phrase, the buck stops with you. Yeah. I have my sister, who is not a CEO, but she's a senior lecturer. She said to me many, many, many years ago, she said, I would not like the buck to stop with me. And I said, well, that's it. But look, you're cut out for it. But it can be a lonely place. And you know, you have to come up with a solution. And I'm a firm believer. I'm really good at eking out talent. Mm. I'm quite good at sitting back to say, okay, who can help me solve this, and eking that out. But that's the hardest part. Mm. And look, sometimes there can be conflict, and sometimes you have to deliver the hard message. But if you're delivering a hard message in an authentic way that genuinely adds value to your task or your business or your organization, then you have,
or the person you're giving it to.
Yeah, yeah. That you have to do it, and that's it. But there's different ways of doing it.
Who have you, or who do you seek advice from?
Yeah, I believe in mentoring and coaching.
Okay.
So I have mentoring and coaching, both, you know, leadership and technical. So the board always a good source of advice, and I would have, I would have a few. I would have individuals who are senior in their respective roles, who I would dial up. I'd have a few people on speed dial.
Yes, I would.
But I'd be cautious who I, yeah, I'm cautious who I would turn to, because, you know, everybody's situation is different and their perspective is different. So, you know, I build up a relationship with a mentor or a coach, and there has to be a level of trust mm-hmm. there as well. Yeah. So, yeah.
Has fear of failure ever been a driving force for you?
No, it's the ambition to succeed, because we fail every day in different ways, small ways and so on. No, it's the drive for impact. It's the drive for added value that gets me up in the morning, and knowing that we can make a difference. And it's an absolute privilege to lead the Clan Credo mm-hmm. team, because every decision we make, and I love when there's a decision that's borderline and the team comes and say, look, we'll look at this together. I love going into the corners and say, well, that's a little bit weak there now, but that's strong there, and getting at that weighing scales again and balancing it up. I love that. And then saying, okay, we see the risk, we know there's risk here, but the social impact is strong, we're going to go for it. Mm-hmm. And when that decision is made, then we stand over it.
Yeah. So again, in that same way, do you hate losing or love winning?
I love to win. I love to win. I love to win. I love to win. But I know part of winning is losing along the way, because you might have to course correct.
Yeah.
But see, do you ever really lose if you come back and reframe something? Do you ever really lose if you say, okay, I've learned there? So unless it's an absolute catastrophic failure where I've totally missed something, which doesn't really happen because I have a great team around me and they tap me on the shoulder to say, look over there or look here. So no, it's all about the potential, the opportunity to deliver. We won't say win, we'll say to deliver.
All right. And then is it fast or slow decision making?
No, I'm a thinker and I'm reflective.
Okay.
And I put time into preparation.
Mm-hmm.
But when I've the thinking done and the reflection over and the preparation done, then decision made and move on. Because you have to make a fast decision. Yeah. Otherwise, it's death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah. And then in the same way, when it comes to your decision making, are they data-based or gut feel?
Well, evidence. They're evidence-based, but I follow my intuition.
Right.
I won't trouble you with the examples, but in the last while, I've followed my intuition. Of course, you'll expect me to say I've been proven right, but I follow my gut, my intuition. I think everybody should follow your gut, but you need the data to give you the guardrails to work down through and scenario planning. And the guys in the finance department are great at scenario planning. I want two or three scenarios and put on the binoculars and tell me where I'm going to go here or where the organisation is going to go. Mm. Yeah. These are great questions you're asking.
Do you obsess about the small things?
No, I'm big picture.
Oh, yeah.
I love the detail. I'm analytical. My leadership style is analytical. No, I don't sweat the small detail. No, I don't sweat the small stuff. I know that I look at the detail, big picture, because it has to be big picture in the game, in the sector of the game we're in, because community development isn't perfect.
Mm.
And there can be delays, there can be, I thought we had that signed, but we hadn't, or whatever. Now, the guys deal with that. But so we're in a sector that's not perfect, but when it delivers, it's fantastic. So big picture stuff.
We've had a few clients, guests on that say, I don't obsess about the small things. I obsess about the important things, which might be small things, but they're very important.
That's it.
Could be big things that aren't important,
that's it.
And that's the ultimate difference of it all.
Well, I think in senior leadership roles, if you're stuck down in the weeds sweating the small stuff, you're misaligned with the role. So leadership, it's about the strategy, the vision, where you're going, the potential, analysing the market.
But it's also about giving the people below you power to and
exactly.
to do it. If you're down in the weeds, they'll never feel as if it's their decision.
Exactly. And that's the delegation part I spoke about. And I have a mantra, because you can't get, there's so much, in a small business like Clan Creator, there's 14 staff members. You know, sometimes you don't have the luxury of, you know, looking out with your binoculars. Yeah. You have to kind of go down into the engine room. So my mantra is, I should be doing what nobody else can do to add value to the business. Mm. I mean, there could be 10 people who could do X, Y over there, but only the chief executive or the leadership team can do Z.
Yeah.
So I have all these little mantras that keep me on the straight and narrow. Yeah.
How do you feel about what you've already done in the company?
Well, I'm very proud of the team. We put a lot of investment into recruiting, and the team are terrific. Mm. They're the drivers behind the business. So what we have put in place has served us well, but there's a lot more to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm clear on what needs to be done, particularly around the next wave of community groups. They'll be tech savvy.
Mm.
They'll want instant decisions and... what we've done with the team, we've done well, and that's borne out by our success. And we're quite sharp at knowing where to invest our sometimes scarce resources, and we have to make decisions. And that has enabled us to grow in the last couple of years. But over the next 2 to 3 years, part of the strategy is... to innovate. Remember, I spoke of the two pillars. Yeah. So
and do you celebrate your wins enough?
Well, in my mind, the a win is a win, and it's a building block, and then I move on. No, yes, of course we could celebrate a bit more, but yes, we go out on a team basis with the 14 of us. 4 times a year, and we have a team away day, and we have a bite to eat, and I normally slip on home before the before the singing starts at the bar. But look, you know, it's our business in some respects is a funny business because in lending, you talk about the loan book growth. And loan book growing are people taking out loans and not paying back or are not paying back yet or whatever. But in Clan Credo, we celebrate when a loan is paid back because the project is completed. The service is in place. So our indicators of success, yes, the business, the growth and so on, but also the projects. And you know, when the guys get an email back in to say we had our first class in the community hall or we had
our first event.
Our first event. We bought the bus or, you know, or whatever it is. That's the reward. That's terrific.
On the staff, and you said you're 14 people, but as a general, it's not obviously a very big workforce, but as a general rule, are you more in the hire talent or develop from within? Develop people from within?
Well, in the last while, it had to be hire in because we were growing the business. But as part of the delegation strategy, we're developing the team to be mobile within the business. But I'm a strong believer in putting an equal focus on technical competencies and behavioural competencies. I put a lot of focus on behaviours because technical competencies, you can learn the nuts and the bolts, the trade, but the behaviours are the behaviours, and because that's how you express your technical skills and so on. So for the last while, it has been recruit externally. We're open to
development.
We are, and we do that as part of the delegation strategy.
All right, we've come to the black book time.
Oh my lord!
Let's see what we have for you today. All right, you're unfortunate because you have a two-parter because the book that I've just written was I interviewed two people and they decided to put down two questions.
That's the weighing scales now.
Well, interesting, right? Yeah. There is a kind of a weighing scale.
All right.
First question for you is, what is the thing that keeps you awake at night?
In a work context?
Yeah.
Sourcing the next tranche of capital to meet the demand from community groups.
Okay. And your second one, parter, this is a bit like your leaving cert. There's always two-part questions in your leaving cert. If you had a do-over, what would you choose to do differently?
Within a work context or my whole life?
Well, your career, let's do, we did the work context the first time.
All right.
Let's do your career now. If you had a do-over.
If I were back again, young, free and single, I would possibly travel more.
Right.
I landed into, you know, pretty good roles early in my early 20s. And of course, I didn't want to let go of those. So if I were back again, if I could create an extra year in there somewhere, I would travel abroad and I would pick up a language where I would be fluent in a language, maybe French or something like that. Yeah.
Right.
Just to really impress everybody.
No, I didn't ask you this, but because it kind of ties into that one though. Finally, what advice would you give to young people today? Career advice, life advice, anything?
In a work context, I would say build your relationships, whether in secondary school, third level, in the club, wherever you are, your network, your people, your relationships. That's your scaffolding that you lean on in good times and bad times. I would say to the ladies out there, lean in. Lean into those senior positions. Go for it. It's not perfect. Nobody's perfect. But I would say, I'd say go for it and network.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Mary Lawler. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe or comment. If you enjoyed what you heard, many thanks, and we will see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.